He was determined to defend traditional monarchies, and I should say, traditional social orders, anywhere he found them, against the rising tide of democratic and even social revolution in Europe. He made plans, in fact, in 1830, a time in which revolutions were breaking out in France and other places, but especially in France. He made plans to actually send Russian troops all the way across the continent into France to try to defend the traditional government and suppress this rebellion. He was distracted by a greater problem in his own front yard, namely a rebellion in Poland, which had become part of the Russian Empire since Catherine II, a rebellion in the name of independence, national independence, but also a democratic order. This was a more immediate concern, and that's where he sent troops instead. In 1848, when an even greater wave of revolution swept across Europe, Russia did in fact actively intervene in some of these revolutions, especially those nearer at hand in Eastern Europe, in particular in Moldavia and in Hungary. These interventions of Russia into the politics of Europe earned him, on one hand, a certain admiration, especially from governments like Austria, very happy to have him help them put down the uprising in Hungary. But in the eyes of liberal democratic Europeans, educated Europeans who existed in large numbers, he became known as the gendarme of Europe, a man determined to intervene in the name of traditional power. We also see at home similar efforts regarding intense imposition of order in his own domestic policies. Parallel to his foreign policy, we can see this in what is often described as Russification policies throughout the empire, in particular, of course, in troublesome Poland. This meant efforts to impose Russian language, Russian culture, on all the various peoples of the Russian Empire, integrate them, make them think they're Russians, make them try to forget about their desire to have nations of their own, and crush any signs, of course, of nationalism among many of these various groups. This was seen as essential to order, to unity, to discipline in the empire, though the practice, the effect of all of this, was only to increase resistance even more. He was also known in his policies, again, a reflection of this desire to impose order everywhere, for enormous cultural repressiveness. And remember, we've talked about the cultural ferment and change in Russia in the late 18th and into the early 19th century. He tried to stop it where he could. In education, for example, teachers, students, lectures, books, all became suspect, had to be submitted to the government and approved in advance, and were kept under very close supervision. And only officially approved views, approved in advance, were to be allowed in the classroom. In fact, there's one famous story where Nicholas I is riding in his carriage, going by St. Petersburg University, which, as you remember, Alexander I had really created into a truly modern liberal arts type of university. And he says, "Stop the carriage there, driver." And he looks up at the university and he says to his companion, "You know, in there is a wolf's den." And he was determined to root out these wolves wherever he could find them. Censorship, the press, was another wolf's den in his view, became much more restrictive than it had ever been before. An elaborate oversight bureaucracy was created to make sure that unacceptable views were not to be heard. Even science was put under tighter controls. You never knew what scientific ideas might undermine tradition, especially religious tradition. In fact, many began to speak about the fact that Nicholas had created what amounted to what we would later call a police state in Russia. And in some ways, this notion that Nicholas created a police state is literally true. He established a special police agency called the Third Department of His Majesty's Own Chancery. And the initial purpose of this institution, this Third Department, was to avoid a repeat of the Decembrist Rebellion. But it became a very wide-ranging force in the following years. It was, first of all, entirely secret and entirely personal. It functioned outside of all law except the emperor's will. And its agents, who were dressed in these rather ominous-looking sky-blue uniforms, became a pervasive presence in especially urban areas in Nicholas I's Russia. They sought out dissent, opposition, nonconformity, wherever they could find it, and suppressed it.